Hello, what is up, and welcome to Off the Books, where we're surfing the uncharted waters of accounting, of finance, and wherever else those waves take us. I am Drew Dubner. I am your host. I am not an accountant, but I like asking questions of people who are, so finance professionals can do their jobs better. Today, we've got a doozy of a show. We've got Steve Soter and the legendary, often imitated but never duplicated, Ben Taylor of Soft Ledger. Steve, would you tell the fine folks at home who you are?
Thanks, Drew. Hello, everybody. This is Steve Soter, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado. Looking forward to debiting some justice today to the rampant problem of Diet Coke fraud, which we'll get into shortly. Happy to be here.
Thanks, Drew. I'm Ben Taylor, CEO and co-founder of Soft Ledger, accounting software purpose-built for flexibility and connectivity. We're focused on getting our customers to a one-day close. And yeah, excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Fantastic. So Ben, we had you in for a two-part episode on cryptocurrency and blockchain, and our mailroom at the Off the Book Studios was flooded with a number of questions about the blockchain. So basically, we talked about it in hypotheticals, not examples. And some of the stuff we were hearing was, how do we break that down into things that actually occur? So our research team got busy and looked into some of the easier examples to understand. And I want to talk through them with you both. One of those is the supply chain. So imagine this. In the real world, a farmer grows wheat and harvests it and probably sells it to a distributor at a grain elevator. That distributor, in turn, sells it to someone else who likely processes it into flour or some other stuff, eventually making its way to my grocery store, either as wheat itself, as flour, or something else. I'm not a farmer. A lot of touch points there, and we're not really talking to each other or communicating along the way. And I think there's something in tandem here with blockchain. Ben, for the process I've just described of going from wheat to flour in my grocery store, what is happening on the blockchain, or what could conceivably happen on the blockchain for each one of those steps?
Sure. While I wouldn't purport to be an expert on this particular process, essentially it should work a lot as a lot of supply chain processes would. You're moving things of value between various steps in this chain. And so either there's systems that have to communicate between each other each time, or there could be a single distributed ledger that is just documenting the different states in this. So it's sitting with the farmer, and then it goes to a distributor. Maybe it's sold ultimately to the customer, and that's an end state. And at each time, maybe there's accumulated costs. Certain parties need to be notified, or ownership has to be transferred. It's just potentially a way of doing that in a more distributed fashion, where you don't really need to trust anyone's centralized system for it.
So Ben, this might seem like a silly question, but how would you know that something that has been recorded on the blockchain, like, hey, I handed off this wheat to this grain elevator at, you know, X quantity times X price. How does everybody know that that transaction really happened? Is there some kind of like check by the counterparty that acknowledges and that gets recorded as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, one of the things distributed ledgers don't solve on their own, but is a key feature that helps with this process, is it makes it easier to achieve consensus on what is the state of the ledger. And so if you've got all the checks in place to make sure that when the ledger is updated with whatever the next transaction is, all parties in that can be running their own computers to verify that that happened.
Got it. So then let's take this a little closer to home for our accounting and finance friends. It seems pretty obvious, but tell us in specific ways how that's helpful to accounting and finance folks that might be involved in financial reporting or auditing or some of the other downstream impacts of these processes.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So of course, having all that data in one place and a ledger that you can rely on, you know, assuming you can get there, obviously there's steps that go into that, garbage in, garbage out. So you need to make sure that that you can rely on what's in there. If that's the case, then it's great, because you don't need to go any steps further. If this is a process where where a piece of paper or several pieces of paper are moving with this shipment and could get lost or transcribed. And there's various steps along the way where some centralized authority has to do something manual to verify that ownership's transferred appropriately. Then it makes it so much more of an auditing headache if that's the process. So having it all in one place that you could assign access to auditors and other stakeholders in the process would be very helpful.
And do you get the sense that the direction is heading, maybe not immediately, but at some point in the future, to where auditors will accept a mutually recorded and verified transaction on the blockchain as the source of truth, as sufficient documentation to be able to trust that this transaction indeed happened on the blockchain? Do you see that headed that way?
I think so, yeah. When you get into the details of what could happen, what could cause a transaction to happen that's not correct or something fraudulent, there's a lot of considerations that auditors need to go through. But ultimately, that's the reason these ledgers exist and continue to process transactions. So I think after you get through that, I mean, yeah, it can get to the point where you could really rely on a transaction that happened on the blockchain.
I've heard people talk about, you know, this could really be the future of accounting. This could replace what we generally refer to as the general ledger, because now this becomes almost like a super ledger with a lot more detail and additional verification that we just discussed. I mean, is it conceivable that suddenly general ledgers are out of fashion and it's all blockchain all the time?
I guess it is possible, but right now it's not clear why that would be better for the purpose that a general ledger is serving. I mean, first, just from a technical standpoint, blockchains are too slow to handle any significant amount of general ledger transactions efficiently. It costs money to process transactions on the blockchains, on blockchains generally. The other thing is your general ledger is really geared towards getting your own company's internal books and records correct. And a blockchain, and as we're talking about it here, kind of relates to parties doing business with each other. And how that transaction reflects on each of their books is really up to each company, and that's where the general ledger comes in. We see it, you know, working interoperably with general ledgers, but I don't see those putting general ledger systems out of business. Obviously biased here.
Sure. So what I hear you telling me is that because both parties would have to agree that this blockchain becomes the system of record for both of our accounting purposes or whatever, it makes it hard to rely on that as a single source of truth until everybody has signed up and in agreement. Plus, and this is something that I didn't realize, it sounds like every time you hit the blockchain, you're going to pay somebody some money, presumably the one that controls that blockchain.
Who are you paying? Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, it depends on what it is. If it's a public blockchain like Bitcoin or Ethereum, you're paying the miners, so the various nodes, the computers on the network that are processing the transactions, get paid a certain amount of money to process each transaction. So if it's happening on the blockchain or on-chain, as people refer to it, it costs money.
Interesting.
Dang. Well, I think that's a good place to press pause for 1 second. We got a great example coming up after the break. Be back in a hot jiffy. Today's episode of Off the Books is brought to you by Workiva. Author Stephen King is famous for lots of novels, including It, Pet Sematary, The Shining, and that one you left at an airport Qdoba but can't remember the name of, but it was good. What's interesting about Stephen King is lots of things, and also that he writes all his novels by hand, like writes them out, pen and paper, carpal tunnel, the whole thing. To me, that's insane. For anyone that's ever used a computer, that's completely bonkers. We have made advances past that already. Yet, Stephen King keeps doing his King thing that way. Dear listener, you are not Stephen King, I am sorry to tell you. You have deadlines and audit committees and bosses and outside auditors and the SEC breathing down your neck. That's why it's time to take your accounting and compliance work out of the pen and pencil dark ages of Microsoft Word and Excel and into today. Here's Workiva. Automate the useless stuff and spend more time on what's important. No more pencils down. Link critical data from point to point and keep working right up until they tell you not to anymore. Plus, work anywhere you need to be. Home, the office, or room 237 at the Overlook Hotel. After all work and no play makes you a dull person. Yes, Workiva, it just makes sense. Come play with us forever and ever and ever. Check out workiva.com/podcast to learn more and to see a demo. That's workiva.com/podcast. And we're back. You know, Steve, over the break, we were talking about wine.
I wanted to get to another more real-life practical example, as Drew mentioned, Ben. This one touches on wine. So similar to the farmer example, a vineyard or a winery will go grapes, which eventually get processed into wine. That wine eventually makes its way to individuals. But different from wheat, the vintner and the vintage of a wine is really important in terms of the taste and quality of the wine itself. Along those lines, wine fraud evidently is a pretty big deal. And what I mean by wine fraud is that you pay for a certain vintner and vintage of a wine, but you actually receive something inferior to that. And by the way, let's be clear, I've been complaining about this similar problem with Diet Coke for a very long time. Would love to learn how we can get some justice there. So Ben, kind of the same questions as above, using that example of a winery, what exactly is happening on the blockchain for the processes I've just described? I expect it's probably pretty similar to the farmer example earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Diet Coke or wine, it'll all be the same. it's similar in that example, but like you said, I mean, flour is flour. If you have these goods that are homogenous, that's different than if it's serialized and you really need to know which vintage, which all the way down to which barrels were mixed to get to this particular red blend that was in this batch on X date. That's really important. And so I think it adds a little bit more complexity to the tracking in that you need to know exactly where something came from and whether it's authentic. And that's, there are a number of companies working on that specifically for wine. And then there's some other overall around like counterfeit designer goods as well.
So Ben, again, how's the blockchain useful here? Similar to the Pharma example, is useful because it benefits the end consumer of the thing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's so all these different, they call it nodes on the network, have to agree that each time a transaction's processed, that it's right. You know, what goes into that logic can really vary, but assuming you have all the inputs down correctly, that's an excellent way of saying, okay, this bottle of wine definitely came from this vineyard. At the vineyard, you could say it came from these barrels. So theoretically, if you have your whole system down, you could have an end consumer scan a barcode and say, okay, these are barrels, the ones that this came from. And that's just practically not that the technology is not there, but it doesn't exist today.
Yeah. I'm also kind of thinking about this in, do you remember a few months ago or maybe a year ago where romaine lettuce was like a big fearful thing? Like we had to be very afraid of romaine lettuce. I wonder if the blockchain could conceivably be used to track down the romaine lettuce in our store, down to where it grew. If they isolated, that's where the problem lettuce came from.
Yeah, I would suspect that the same logic could apply. I don't know how expensive it is to revamp your whole supply chain and throw out, you know, probably more produce than you needed to if you can't isolate exactly where it came from. So I would expect it makes that process potentially much more efficient.
It takes lettuce to grow lettuce. That's what I always say.
Ben, I don't want to be a downer here, but I do wonder, is this at least today a bit of a solution looking for a problem?
I think that it's a mix of things. So there are definitely problems that are being solved or are in the process of being a solution is being made for real world problems where this is the best solution for them. A lot of times it is, you know, a solution looking for a problem, and I think that's the problem that we've had. I think I'd mentioned on a previous episode that there's so many different disciplines of people coming from different backgrounds that get excited about this for their own industries. And so that's really been a very promising thing I've seen is the number of really, really interesting ideas that have come out of this. It's I constantly hear new ones.
Yeah, the mind boggles about how this can go.
When I can get to where I can take my can of Diet Coke and know exactly what river or natural water source, you know, it was sourced from, I know that I'll sleep easy at night. Until that day, I got to stay vigilant.
You know, that dovetails really well with our closing question of the day. You know, we're all working away. We've got back-to-back meetings all day. We got to stay hydrated. Tell me, Ben and Steve, about the beverage on your desk right now. What do you got?
It's eerily similar every single day. Got the coffee cup on the right, glass of water on the left, and it pretty much just gets replaced at the end of every day.
The old duo.
Yeah.
I realize you meant this as a lighthearted question, Drew. I'm a tiny bit offended that you would even need to ask. What I will tell you is that as it happens today, my Diet Coke is jumbo sized. And when it's that large, I call it a Big Bird.
Well, drink up. I wasn't expecting that. That's a Big Diet Coke.
I don't know what I was expecting, but that's a Big Bird.
You have a gas station down the street for me, or you can just like walk over there and get a Diet Coke?
As it happens, my wife was just at the gas station. She's like, hey, do you want a soda? Well, that's a silly question. Do I want to breathe oxygen? Yes, of course I want a soda. So there you go.
I'm Drew Dubner. This has been Off the Books. Please subscribe, leave a review, buy me a very expensive bottle of wine, or tell your buddies if you like the show. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.